What you know about layer 1 D5, greatest in the world, and they finally about to see why. What you know about XRD, I'm smart money, I ain't never on a decline. What you know about NFTs, it's not just ace, when you finally gonna realize. You need scalability, need more utility, then you better call on these guys. I'm going radical, I'm going radish, I'm going radical, I'm going radish. Hyper speed D5, never on a decline, building the future, I feel like a savage.
Hello and welcome. I am Piers Ridyard, CEO of RDX Works, a core developer of the decentralized finance protocol Radix, a public ledger entirely focused on bringing DeFi into the mainstream. This is our podcast, The DeFi Download, a show about decentralized finance and all things crypto, where we dive into the details of the projects, assets, and services that are powering the DeFi and Web3 revolution. Today, I have Skimantas, CEO and co-founder at Dapp Radar, the world's Dapp store, a community-owned gateway into Web3 and DeFi with the ambition to be owned by millions and used by billions. Dapp Radar already tracks over 12,000 dApps and has over 500,000 monthly active users. Skimantas, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Pleasure to be here.
So how long ago did you guys start Dapp Radar?
We're actually celebrating a 5-year anniversary next month.
5 years. Five years. Congratulations.
3-4 weeks.
So it was like the idea came during the bull run of the token era, and then you built during the bear era of 2018.
Well, I could actually say, everyone's like, we're here for technology, not for money. I can actually say that very well, that I'm here for technology. The thing is, you must remember CryptoKitties or heard about them.
Sure.
So that was exactly pretty much, how we started. My co-founder, Tragos, he's been telling me about Bitcoin for probably 5 years, before we actually started. Let's do something. It's going to be the future. Mm. And I was the one, probably 99% of people still in the world think, hey, this is not how things work. This is some shady stuff happening in crypto. Basically, right. Didn't know anything about it. And then I saw CryptoKitties kind of booming.
Yeah.
And I was, let's take a look, because, I was a software engineer. Like, I want to understand what that is. Okay, smart contracts. Read about them. The first thing that clicked in my mind was, hey, we have poker stars, right? If, I don't know what the odds are. I could be scammed there any day, don't know. But if we put that on smart contracts and open sourced, I'm damn sure that, these are the right odds, and I'm not scammed whatsoever. So that was my first interaction with understanding the blockchain and how it works.
Interesting.
And then I just got stuck for it and tried to find more dApps, and there was no way really.
So CryptoKitties wasn't actually the kitties themselves that captured you, but it was the idea of what you could now use a blockchain for. It wasn't just the idea of storing value in Bitcoin, but now that you have this idea of smart contracts where you have a way of trustlessly executing some logic, and your ideas, you straight away were like, okay, well, I like poker, and so, but I never know whether or not that I'm being scammed in some way, and now this is some way of making a transaction that you have to trust some entity, and these entities are always shady, to something that, well, of course, it's absolutely just enforced on ledger, and everyone gets what they're supposed to, and no one can trick it because it's a smart contract.
Yeah, I always felt that I missed the mobile era. Kind of, I was still too young to do something meaningful about it.
Yeah.
And then I was kind of waiting for, okay, when something new happens that is, at that significance. And then crypto appeared, and I didn't know that it's going to happen. And then when CryptoKitties started, moving the waters, I was like, okay, maybe it's time to try this and see what's in there. And then, I got to the tech part. Wow. Like purely from the software engineering perspective, it was, wow, okay, that makes sense. And then the rest just unfolded.
So why did Dapp Radar, why was Dapp Radar where you went? From going, oh, cool, I could enforce, your idea seemed to first be, let's build a dApp. So why did Dapp Radar be the thing that you built?
That was actually the first idea, to build a dApp.
Yes.
And, then I got to know a bit of Solidity and this and that. But the thing is, we were actually creating a small dApp back in the days, thinking of a game, actually.
Mm.
And the quality of games that were back in the days, couldn't really call it a game, or like some Ponzified DeFi, whatever you call it. And then, you know, we kind of said, okay, let's do some more research. What's in there? So the time span between figuring out about smart contracts and founding DappRaider is like 2-3 months. So there is not much. But then we were like, okay, how can we find more of these dApps and see what else is out there? And where is the interest? And I think there was just one website that was more like a catalog of finding dApps there, but just a catalog. You know, you don't have statistics, nothing else. And you click on those dApps and then you see, okay, one of them is already kind of dead project. The other, you know, rug pulled and stuff like that. So you don't know what to trust, where to find them and so on. And then it was because of that smart contract learning previously, like all the data is public out there. You know, all you need is to know what kind of data to put in which buckets. Let's try something. So then, you know, Friday to Sunday, one weekend, we just did this little project back in the days, DappRaider.com, pushed it through, I think, Reddit. There is still the first post somewhere. And yeah, the demand was there already. You know, people were looking for those, but there was nobody offering this. So we already knew that, okay, we got something. In 1 month, we both quit our jobs and started working full time.
That's awesome. So, I mean, like it seems a simple thing to say, right? But it's a hard thing to do. But it's a simple thing to say is the trick is to keep the data up to date. I think that the like my early days in Ethereum, I remember there was a couple of like websites. I can't even remember what it was called. There was like some like Ether Projects or something like that. And it was like it was supposed to be able to track all of the projects on Ethereum. But then it was like it was clearly one dude and he just got like bored of updating it one day and it just the data got stale. And another great example of that, I'd say, is DeFi Pulse. All right. DeFi Pulse came into the market right when DeFi Summer was before DeFi Summer, or just about when DeFi Summer was kicking off, and it was the right product, but then they just didn't really do anything like with it. They didn't really like upgrade the interfaces. They didn't really upgrade the feeds, and then sort of DeFi Llama was able to come in and create a much better product out of it. And you know, like those things, you say it's just on Ledger, but that's a really hard thing to do. I know that it's not simple to pull this data when you have, there isn't really standardized interfaces for each smart contract. They all have their own different ways of like sort of pulling data out. And like, you have to work out how to extract the correct data, and each dApp has its own little way of like doing things. And like lots of those are because they're trying to be gas efficient, but as a result, they're very difficult to understand what's happening or which contract to look at and all this kind of stuff. So there's a lot of hard work there, right?
The thing is, I mean, talking about DeFi Pulse, actually, one of the things why I think, you know, it ended up the way it ended, what I remember is at that point in time when DeFi started growing, also other chains started to, you know, appear and be more popular. And then we had, I think we had BSC, we had Tron and EOS and so on. And DeFi Pulse refused to integrate those. And you know, that can be a part of, hey, how can you cover the whole ecosystem and say that's it? For whatever reasons, you know, I understand the debate between like, hey, this is more secure blockchain, this is less secure, and we can all have our own arguments. But that's one thing we don't take on board at DappRaider. Like we don't limit the you know, we don't look at the chain and say, look, we don't like this chain and we are not going to integrate it, you know, even if it's popular. No, our job is to cover the kind of the whole ecosystem, you know, the big amount of it, the massive percentage. And, you know, if we see a chain that's getting more and more popular, we definitely need to get, you know, that on, because users are there, you know, they're using it. So,
And you guys, I mean, looking at your sort of list of chains, right, you guys have got Ethereum, EOS, Tron, ONT, Thundercore, WAX, Steam, Hive, BNB Chain, Polygon Flow. And that's just the first line of
how much time we have.
Three, four, five lines, right? You guys track it like everyone apart from Radix, which is obviously, you know, sort of, you guys are going to have to get on that. But the breadth in which you can see what's going on DappRaider is really impressive. And you have a lot of different types of things, right? You got your rankings, you got portfolio, so you can track your portfolio. You got your NFTs, so you can see what NFTs are hot in all the different places. You got alerts for airdrops, you've got statistics and information about users and transaction volume, you've got sort of your radar, which has got news, and then sort of your blog as well, which covers things around the industry, as well as a lot of like extra information you're pulling in from other publications and stuff like that. So there's a huge amount of information here, and I can see why you guys have got 500,000 monthly active users. Like, from your experience, like, what are you seeing as the major trends for 2023 from sort of being this gateway service?
Yeah, our mindset and focus currently is goes a lot into, well, first of all, it's going to be games. I mean, we're heavily kind of investing now in terms of supporting games to be there, especially when it's kind of becoming different than what we had in the last few years. Mm-hmm. You know, it was many dApps were sort of on chain and doing everything on chain. And that's where, because they were meant to sort of make money for users and in whatever way. But now these things are changing and we're entering like actual games, you know, that you can play, that you can enjoy. And a lot of that gameplay itself is happening off chain. So, you know, how do we track that? And then these are the things that we are preparing for. How do we still display the relevance of certain games when the on-chain data doesn't tell that necessarily? Mm-hmm. Yes, they might still have NFTs. They might still have, you know, some trading there. Mm-hmm. But the actual gameplay, you can't really read that from on-chain. And that's something we're, you know, working on. Another part aside of games, I think social has a lot of potential. You know, we see Lens Protocol and others kind of trying to appear as like, you know, if Lenster, like on Lens Protocol, looks like Twitter, you know, you can just do pretty much the same things. But again, there is no censorship. Or if there is at some point, you just jump to another front end. So I think games and social are going to be pretty strong this year. And when I talk about games specifically, I think games, NFT and DeFi, that combination of three of them, it just doesn't... Games don't make sense without NFTs and DeFi, Web3 games, in my opinion. So that's going to be a very nice combo.
So, like, what are you... Obviously, the trend of games in 2021, 2022 was things like play to earn. How do you see that landscape changing in 2023?
We can get back to sort of looking at, you know, who is the user of those games, right? Mm-hmm. Because if we look at, and again, no matter how much I like Axie, you know, and we've been around for a long time, pretty much started at the same time, there were kind of, it was hard for majority to really enjoy the game, you know, and most of those who were playing, they were playing to, you know, to get rewards and eventually make money. And we saw they did a great job, you know, in especially in developing countries, brought lots of people in first to Web3, but then helped them make more money than they could in their, you know, in their real life, not the Web3 gaming life. So that's amazing. But what I think the next step is actually having games that people would play, even if the earning potential is either minimal or, you know, that's sort of not there yet, could be at some point and so on. And that's what I'm starting to see, what we're all starting to see in this industry. So I think the gameplay component has to change, and it is changing. Mm-hmm. Basically putting gamers first, money-making second. Mm-hmm. And when you have that, then anyone who wants to make money still has enough of those people who want to have fun, and, you know, they're still buying assets, buying gear, you know, to get better and so on. And those who just want to make money, you know, they are keeping it more efficient. They just farm those assets and try to make money.
Okay, so sort of like more focus on users rather than speculation, and sort of like providing a service rather than just being a thin veneer over a speculative asset. And like, it's interesting. I actually interviewed Alex from Axie a couple of episodes back, and he talked about a very similar thing, like the Axie Infinity universe is moving away from where they started with Axie Infinity towards sort of much more of those immersive, first and foremost a gamer's game, and then secondly there being like an underlying economy to it, which I think is a really hard thing to do. This is what, like, building a good game economy on its own is really hard. And then making the things that that game economy relies on tradable adds this secondary element to a game that makes it really hard to design. So I think there's a lot of experimentation that's going to go on in things like that. Where do you think that stuff like Steppen falls into this?
Oh, that's a good question. I don't know, really. We'll have to see. I was not a big, big fan. I tried a couple.
Sure.
But like to me, the value flows are not really matching for me. You know, I'm just walking. Let's say, you know, I'm buying an NFTs an NFT, and I'm walking out there, and I'm earning something. It doesn't make too much sense to me. But I might be missing something.
But I suppose, I mean, wider, like in terms of gamification of things that other than actual games, where an economy comes around it. Obviously, Steppen was a specific example, but there are plenty of successful sports related gamification things that have come along in various forms. I mean, you could talk about things like, it's going to go out of my head completely now, CrossFit. Right, which is sort of like its own community, its own sort of set of rankings, its own way in which it makes you feel part of that community and an owner and a member of it. I wonder if those kind of things are going to happen as well more often as people work out this crossover between gamification and sort of like assets that come out of gamification.
Yeah, I think in general, I mean, I'm a big fan of games, you know, myself. And in whatever form these are games, you know, you could have a physical job, but if you gamify it somehow, you know, make it a competition, and the performance is much better than without it.
Right.
So in general, if you know, if we can bring this gamification to more things in life, and first of all, it's much more fun. Second, well, if you're better than average, you could possibly make some money out of that.
Sure.
And this is where, you know, how is it different than current gaming? And you have esports, you know, where you start making money in current gaming, right. Like in traditional gaming, you don't make any money pretty much, unless the black market. But hey, and then, you know, we have sports, amateur sports, just for fun. And then you have, you know, leagues where you make money. So we can do this with anything. But the thing is that kind of crypto and, you know, tokens, they can potentially make it much easier to build such economies, such communities.
Yeah.
And then it's just about, but that's a very difficult part, like just about a gamification setup. As you said, that's super difficult. We are ourselves currently working on gamifying the whole DappRadar experience. And so I get what you say, you know, that's a super difficult task to bring in many components and try to make it a sound economy out of that.
So for DappRadar itself, what have been your hardest lessons over the years, like sort of that you've learned around building your business and building a user base?
Yeah, there were. It's not like there were none. There were quite a few.
Right. you've seen 1.5 to 2 bull markets now. Sorry, 1.5 to 2 bear markets and one bull market.
Yeah, I think having a deeper communication with our users was probably one of the first ones. But you know that we heard and kind of decided to do things differently because you know if we look back at from 2018 to kind of 2020, there were lots of people sort of telling us, hey guys, why don't you do an ICO? Why don't you launch a token and so on? You know, and we were like, you know, a token doesn't make much sense to us right now. We are kind of the gateway between Web 2 and Web 3. You know, we're onboarding, we're bringing people from Web 2 to Web 3 to dApps. Where is the token painting here? We didn't want to just launch a token for the sake of, you know, whatever, let's have a token. And it took us, you know, quite some time to figure out that, hey, where this industry is going, it's going to be very, very custom in very different ways. You know, okay, we want to track Radix. Hey, that's one way of tracking. We want to track Ethereum, another. On Radix, we have, you know, plenty of different dApps. Tracking every single one of them might be very different. How do we make sure that we support all of them? You know, and then when kind of looking at it deeper, hey, you can have 5,000 employees, you know, as long as it keeps growing and, you know, we get to millions of devs, there's no way anyone can actually, you know, do that on their own. So that's when we kind of understood that, hey, this is exactly why we need the Radar token. And before it made no sense, and now it actually makes sense. So you know, it's not necessarily kind of, you know, a mistake, but kind of that realization could have potentially set us, you know, we could have started that 1 or 2 years ago, before we did, then we would be in a kind of better position. At the same time, I think, you know, we needed to kind of mature together with the ecosystem, because it took some time for the ecosystem to mature to get to where it is now, to get to that customity. Because back in the days, it was pretty much very standard.
So can you close that logical loop for me? So the being closer to your audience, not being able to keep up with all dApps that are coming out, and the Radar token. How do those three things link together?
Yeah. Let me put it this way. Let's say we have Radix on DappRadar already now, which I hope will happen pretty soon. And then we have different dApps on Radix that works in different ways. Mm-hmm. And let's say for 50% of dApps, we're able to track unique active wallets and other main metrics just, you know, natively based on what we already do. But there are some of them that work in different ways. They might have kind of meta transactions or, you know, different kind of things that the standard trackers do not catch, let's say. Mm-hmm. And then if we want to track those applications, we need to go one by one and, you know, understand how they work, keep contact with developers of those dApps. And that's quite a bit of work if you think about, you know, just one dApp.
Yep.
But I'm sure in those communities, you know, in Radix community or that dApp specific community, there are community developers who are just fans of this application and they understand mm-hmm. how it works. They can help. Right. Heck, they could integrate that themselves right. if we provide tools. Right. So this is where we say contributors, community mm-hmm. contributors. And, you know, when I said operated, the world's dApp store operated by millions, used by mm-hmm. billions, those are the kind of operators mm-hmm. Who are providing their input, mm-hmm. Which could be integrations, could be curation, reviews, and, you know, writing guides and so on. And they are getting rewards, mm-hmm. obviously, for that. But then they are strengthening the whole dApp store, you know, because they're keeping it updated. Mm-hmm. So we're, you know, it's not just listening to them, but mm-hmm. allowing them to provide their input and putting mm-hmm. that input to DappRadar. And then, you know, we have a better dApp store, a more stronger dApp store. Mm-hmm. You know, the whole dApp store generates more revenue, which can be invested again into contributors. And the circle just goes on. You know, the more it goes on, the stronger it gets.
Right. So, and then how does the token fit into that?
So the token is used for, well, the token is in the middle. So, you know, there are contributors who are contributing to, and they get rewards in kind of in Radar token. Mm-hmm. There are different revenue streams that we kind of are feeding into the Radar token. Mm-hmm. At the same point in time, there is a DAO, which is a part of, you know, well, it has governance. So Radar mm-hmm. holders can take decisions on whatever we do at DappRadar. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we've already started that, and the first proposals are going through. I think we had 7 of them so far, the last one just closing. So we want to make it that anyone can use Radar, DappRadar, no matter, you know, if you have Radar or not. You don't need to buy Radar just to use DappRadar and to enjoy the services. Mm-hmm. But if you want something kind of more premium, if you want to enjoy the best of what contributors can provide, you need to have stake, you know, have skin in the game mm-hmm. and to become a part of the ecosystem, and then well, everybody benefits.
Right. Okay. So like it's basically the closest analogy I can think of is like almost like incentivized Wikipedia where you have.
That's a good analogy.
Right. So you're like, look, this is not a not-for-profit entity. It's a for-profit entity. It makes revenue in various ways, which I will ask you in a second. But it can be its value is the correctness and up-to-dateness of the information and the breadth of the information it contains. And so you need a strong community of people who can maintain and update that. And with a token, you have this ability to essentially give back to the community in a very direct way in how they've contributed to the website.
Right. May I add, actually talking about, you know, about the whole ecosystem of Radar, one analogy, not an analogy actually, but like a comparison to make, we call it contribute to earn, like, you contribute, you make money, you strengthen the dApp store. Mm-hmm. And well, it sounds similar to play to earn, right? But, you know, usually play to earn, in the way it worked in 2020, 2021, most of the examples, I'm not saying all of them, but most of the examples were there is just one circle.
Yes.
Where the same people who are investing, they're the ones making money. Kind of the same people who are buying those NFTs to start playing, they're the ones extracting the most. So in the end, if you're the last one to buy these NFTs, well, you're not really getting anything out of there, you know, or getting a small portion. Now with Dapp Radar, what we have, you know, those who are not contributors, they're the ones who are bringing revenue to Dapp Radar. And those who are participating and contribute to earn, they're the ones providing value to those who are paying and getting rewards back. So mm-hmm. like that's a proper model that can right. work for long term. It's a sustainable one, unlike those early play to earn games where you drain right, the same ecosystem.
I think it's a very different, I mean, yeah, yes and no. I mean, the no part for me is that it sounds like a normal two-sided marketplace where you have people who provide a service and people who want to pay for the service, rather than like play to earn. What play to earn tries to do is go, you can play this fun game and also the things that you play are valuable. And if the economy doesn't work, which it normally doesn't, because it's a very simple and often arduous task that has very little sort of entertainment value and is quite grindy and boring, what happens is you get, you know, people in low-income countries creating like little guilds and farming everything and then selling them and pushing the price down of everything. Whereas what you're talking about here is going, there's a bunch of people who get value from the intellectual effort that these people over here are mm-hmm. putting in. I think that's completely different from play to earn and much similar to what you would expect, you know, a normal business model to look like. But what is fantastic about this is that unlike Wikipedia or sort of like community projects like that, you actually have an ability to directly reward people for their contributions because there's a token in between, which I think is very important. So like what, like you're saying millions of owners and billions of users. We currently have 500,000 monthly active users, which is huge in crypto. You know, sort of, I don't know how many token holders you have. How do you get to there? What's the sort of like, what are the next steps of the strategy?
Well, the thing is, we're progressing with the industry, right? So one part of our job is to help the industry grow as well. Mm-hmm. And that's what we do. You know, we're bringing users to dApps and we're bringing dApps to users. That's pretty simple if you think this way. And then the more interest we get from the outer world, you know, about NFTs, about DeFi, about dApps, anything sort of Web3, the bigger chance we have to take them and convert into like an actual Web3 user.
Mm-hmm.
And this is pretty much what we want to do. And that conversion requires those contributions. You know, think of, you heard about Radix dApps somewhere on TV. You know, you heard peers talking on TV, hey, Radix dApps are super cool, go use them. You know, assuming Dapp Radar has Radix integrated, and then, you know, that person goes and Googles Radix dApps, what that is. The person lands on Dapp Radar and sees, you know, different applications, chooses one randomly, clicks on that. And then, you know, we show them like the full potential of what that is. Hey, you know, what is a dApp? First of all, you can click a button and figure it out. Okay, now you know what's a dApp. Hey, how to get started? Okay, here are different kind of wallets on Radix. Here's how to use them. How do I make money? Hey, this is here, you know, why? And all this kind of onboarding journey and what comes after. So there are two main different not kind of user types, but more like what user goes through on a timeline is before you know what to do with this dApp and after you know what to do with this dApp. Because before you want to be, first of all, you want to be impressed that there is something cool and you want to know how to do that. And afterwards, you're still sort of looking for data. Hey, what is going on here? Because no matter how fun it is, I mean, talking about games more like, no matter how fun it is, at some point you will realize, okay, I'm getting some NFTs, what are these things? And then you go to the operator, you see your portfolio. Hey, I have these assets. This is the price that we estimate of those NFTs. One click, sell them. All this journey, this is what you're aiming to provide. And that's why we need these contributors, because doing that for 12,000 dApps on our own, and each dApp is custom.
Yeah.
That's hell of a lot of work, which we don't have resources for that much, but that's what we want to achieve.
That's awesome. So how many contributors do you currently have?
On the DAO side, there is not that many currently. We can look at GitHub, but that's in pretty much in, not in thousands. So we're looking at over a couple of hundred.
I mean, that's still very impressive. Like, if you were building an organization of a couple of hundred people, that would take a long time. And so if people want to get involved in DAP Radar, or they want to help out, or they want to sort of dive deeper, where should they start? How do they get involved in the DAP Radar community?
The best thing is our Discord.
Okay.
So, at the current stage, because we are just starting as a DAO, as this contribute to earn ecosystem, the best place is definitely Discord. And our forum, which is forum.dapprider.com.
Yep.
So you go there, introduce yourself. Hey, this is who I am. This is what I do. This is what I like doing. And then start these conversations on Discord. And we have quite some community members now that are very active and providing good ideas, good suggestions. And then, it's just kind of naturally unfolds. You see a bounty. Hey, I can do this and that. Or you provide a suggestion. Hey, why don't we do this? Or even you can submit a proposal, if you own some Radar. That's the best way now.
Okay, awesome. So your best place to get to your Discord is to go to dappradar.com and then find the Discord link?
Yes.
Okay, awesome. For anyone who hasn't had a chance to check out DAP Radar, I highly recommend it. Dappradar.com has probably the most broad and complete information that I've seen on a single website to find out everything that's going on across all of the different platforms and soon to be Radix too. So please do give that a look. Skimantas, it's been so wonderful to have you on the show.
Thank you, Pierce. Enjoy that. I'm going radical. Hyperspeed DeFi, never on a decline. Building the future, I feel like a savage.